Blog Talk Radio.
Joining me now, the man of the hour, Iron Mike Tyson. Before we talk about your promotional exploits now, let's talk about what happened before the fight.
What happened?
You went over, you spoke to Teddy Atlas. Why did you decide to do that after not speaking to him for 2 decades?
Life is short, man. I don't got no, I made amends with everybody. I never talked to Teddy and made any kind of amends with him or said sorry. And I just owe that to my sobriety to make amends. And that's just what I want to do with my life. You know, I'm a vicious addict, and I'm recovering, and I'm a die. If I don't follow my steps, I'm useless. If I don't do what the book tells me to do, I'm going to die. And that's just what's going to happen.
How important was Teddy Atlas to you earlier in life?
Extremely important. And he was next to my friend Costa, too, one of my best friends. I was just so happy that Costa, is a good man. And I was just happy that he seen that I really met and was sincere about making my amends to Teddy. I was wrong, and I'm just happy to be man enough to make my amends. You know, I don't know what life has in store for me. I'm never going to be wealthy. You know, that stuff is never going to happen. I'm just happy if I die tomorrow, I was overpaid. And that's just one of the perks right there.
Well, we were glad to see it. I know Teddy Atlas certainly appreciates it. Now you're a promoter. What made you think you were going to be a good promoter?
Hey, I don't know. The only thing I know is that at the end of the day, the fighters won't be like Mike Tyson and say, hey, where'd my friends and money go, you know? And that's just not what I want to do. I want to be here, and I want to get the best interest of the fighters. And I don't know where this is going to lead yet. This is just my first event, and I'm just very grateful. And that's what I'm trying to convey is gratitude.
Your career will be forever linked with your promoter at the time, Don King. What did you learn from him as far as what not to do?
Well, I learned not to abuse my fighter. And also about that, I have no grudges against Don. I love and forgiveness is a great focus in my life. And if I can forgive them, hopefully people can forgive me who I did wrong to.
Do you remember the maddest you ever got at Don King, something he did that really got under your skin?
Well, whatever he did, he took my money, and I was angry. And I did a lot of bad things to people, too. So, listen, this is the real deal. I'm not supposed to be heavyweight champ. I'm not supposed to have all that money. I'm not supposed to have all the planes, the cars, the houses, the beautiful women. I'm not supposed to have all that thing. That's not supposed to happen to me, but it did. And I'm very grateful for it. And I'm very grateful for the life I have now. And I'm going to try to rebuild it and continue to be positive role model for me in my life. I can't do nothing. I have control over nobody else but me. And that's all. I can't get nobody well if I'm not well. And I want to get well from a human and a psychological and emotional perspective. I have a lot of pain, and I just want to heal it. And that was part of it right there.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Arousing Rich Bergeron. And we have Psychic Tom on the line for the first time to start the show in a long time. How's it going, Tom?
What a way to start. What a way to start the show, huh? Gets us right in the mood.
Well,
right.
Well, words of wisdom from the recovering alcoholic, I guess. That was the one thing that kind of surprised me these last few days. I actually, for some reason, I don't know how, but I ended up missing the whole broadcast of Friday Night Fights, which is the one that I wanted to see more than any other one this whole year. But I don't know what happened. I just had a brain fart, I guess, and forgot it was on. And so I did look up the results and found it kind of shocking that we had a draw again in the main event. But more importantly, I've been following the news after that whole broadcast, and it seems like Mike Tyson's been living a little bit of a lie. I don't know if you guys saw this, but, you know, he keeps talking about being an alcoholic, this, that, and the other thing. Most news outlets are saying, you know, he's recovered. He's straight now. But apparently he said something in an interview regarding this fight card that he's only been sober 6 days. So.
Well, it would be 11 now, Rich. It would be 11 days now he's been sober.
Yeah.
let's give full credit, all right?
Yeah. Well, if he keeps it up, but anyway, he's I guess he's still struggling from it. And I actually was kind of surprised that only one newspaper over in the UK actually put out an article on that fact that he admitted that he's been lying to everybody about being a, you know, in recovery and you know, even though he keeps saying he's a vicious alcoholic and this, that, and the other thing, he didn't really clarify that he's been saying stuff that wasn't true for a while. But the bottom line is, you know, he's trying, so we got to give him credit. But most of the actual news that followed this event, I kept getting in the boxing alerts every day, surrounded the fact that he went and had a cameo appearance at a wedding after the whole thing. In Verona, New York, he just stumbled into a wedding and started taking pictures with everybody.
Nice. I think that's
kind of
awesome.
Yeah. So lucky for those people. We got a celebrity at the wedding, free of charge. But anyway, it was a great event. Arash Usmani, they probably, if he had really lost the fight, like I heard a lot of people say he might have, they probably really didn't want to give him that second loss on Friday night fight, so maybe it was a little bit of a sympathy vote to give him the draw there, but...
Yeah, that's my feelings exactly. I had him behind at least three rounds. Some of them were competitive, but I still think the decision should have went the other way. But like you said, maybe that kind of evened it up. So couldn't do it twice.
So now they have identical records. Mendez is 20 wins, one loss, and one draw, and so does Usmani. After that 12 round, and then the co-main event there was the Jesus fight of the week, I guess. Jesus Queller, 23-1, won on points against Claudio Marrero. Again, I didn't see this, so you guys will have to provide a little bit of a after fight report here.
Mm-hmm. Well, that one. Well, I'll let Tony go ahead. You give your take on it, Tony.
Okay. Are we still talking about last week's Friday night fights?
Right.
Right.
Okay. Unfortunately, I have no opinion. I was at the fight Friday night.
Oh, that's right.
Didn't I send you guys an article just
right, ago? Right, right. I have the article.
Well,
yeah.
By the way, did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you, I think ESPN has to do a better job of providing people with replays of that Friday night fight, too, because every other major cable network does it, you know, on a different night of the week or something, and I've never heard of ESPN Friday night fights being rebroadcast. And I tried to look for it online, and you have to be like an ESPN 3 subscriber. And it doesn't even give you the option of putting in the cable network that I have in my area to get access. So I don't know what the hell they can do, but it's got to be a better system to watch those fights if you can't see them the first time.
So, but I was going to say, we're lucky enough to get them to give one broadcast. If they did a multiple broadcast, it would like literally be like what the rules at maybe dodgeball, like, ESPN 8, the HO, you might be able to find that on.
Yeah, I really thought I couldn't watch it again. Spike TV does it all the time. They rebroadcast Bellator fights. They used to rebroadcast the UFC fights after they were over. But you can't even, like... You can't even Google it online and find any kind of clips or anything half the time, unless somebody in the audience takes a video of the fight. Even then, it's kind of curated. So,
I mean, like back in the day, you know, when there was only one USA, and this is before there was only one ESPN. When the fights were on, if you didn't set your VCR to tape them, you missed them. But now, it's like you got, you know, on demand, you got you know, where you can download. And, yeah, I didn't DVR it, so I didn't even think about it. You know, I left for work that morning, And then I was more concerned about, you know, just making sure I got out of my job on time to get the King of Prussia on time. I had to pick my tickets up there on the spot. Oh, it was a clusterfuck. And, Tom, you're going to get a kick out of this because you went with me to the last card.
Mm-hmm.
The last card, when we went to, was you either bought at a certain price range. You either got your VIPs, which were, like, right in the front, like, one row in the front or two rows in the front. Then you had your $75, quote-unquote, ringside, where you would sit anywhere in the ringside area. And then you had your $45 general admission. Now, we got in there early, so we got the first row of general admission. But the problem
right.
we run into is you were people that were, like, I guess, fans and friends and, you know, buddies with a bunch of fighters. And they were seated right in the back, and they would just run up and push as far as they could into that section. And then you were there first, and they're blocking your view because they're standing up. So that was
yeah.
the end. So this time we buy the $75 seat. What do? They give you assigned seats this time. So we get there early. We get in when the door is open. And they're like, your seats are over here, second row, all the way on the one end. They're like, this sucks, you know. But they're like, hey, if a lot of these seats, we figure we're not going to be filled because, you know, it wasn't Father's Day weekend like it was last time. And Harry Yogi wasn't on the card, and he brings in a lot of people. So they're like, dude, just move more to the center, which we did. I was literally seated right where the aisle was. And that's great. But then you had all these people that had $45 tickets that were walking almost to ringside. And they're blocking the view. And you're telling people, hey, can you sit down? Hey, I can't see. Half of them didn't speak English.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that, you know, it was a comment, you know, about, you know, Hispanic people or whatever. It's the fact of the matter. Some people sit down and they're like, blah, 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 blah. And then, but it was funny, and I mentioned in the article, like, two Spanish fans were fighting each other, two Puerto Ricans. And then their fans were, like, you know, both going at it. They were kind of like, trying to yell over each other. And they were alternating between English and Spanish, which is pretty funny. I mean, there were some people that would literally change languages in mid-sentence.
Well, when we were there, Tony, finally security did get involved in it. What happened this time?
Yeah. Up in our section, really, security didn't do shit. I mean, the only time they were really telling people to sit down and get out of the way was before or after the fights, when the fighters were either coming to the ring down the aisle or going back up the aisle. That was really it. Even my dad said he was a little pissed off last time because he didn't feel security did enough, but I think they did less this time. Now, this time our seats were right on the aisle. Right where the fighters were walking. So
yeah.
I can't tell you how different it would have been in the section we sat at. Because we were all the way on the other side almost. But I'll tell you what was pretty cool. Now, this is probably one of the most challenging fight reports I had to write. I've been doing this for 6 years now. Usually, you get to your main event. And that's, you know, that's your starting point, the main event. Like when I did the Harry Yogi fight, the last two, the one I did was like the scene from Rocky II, which 10 minutes from his house. The other one I did was I said, okay, you know, rarely is the sequel as good as the original. And then I mentioned movies like where the sequels were better, like The Godfather 2 and The Empire Strikes Back. And then I compared that to Yogi fight with Kennedy. This main event was, at times it was exciting. At times, you know, these guys were really trading and they were both pretty big punchers. But at the same time, it was kind of slow and it was kind of sloppy. The most entertaining fight of the night was the opening fight. It was that guy that we saw the last time he came out with the big afro on and the sunglasses.
Yeah.
He fought again. And since I was right on the aisle, we got to see his whole coordinated entourage come out to the ring doing a synchronized dance to the song Roller Coaster. And he had people cracking up. And the entrance was about 3 minutes longer than the fight. when I wrote my article, because the way I do it is, you know, I cover the main event, I cover the code feature, and then I say another bout, and I give the other ones like a few paragraphs. I started with that night, and I actually wrote the article in reverse.
Sometimes that works. sometimes.
Well, I don't, you know, maybe it's just a sign of the times that we live in, because I think this stuff's always been somewhat of a problem, but it seems like it's getting worse, you know, as far as this rudeness and this me, and I don't care if you paid for those seats, I'm going to stand in front of you and F you, and I ain't moving. And I don't, maybe that's just, I don't know, sign of the times where we live. I don't know.
Have you ever been to a Red Sox Yankees game?
No.
No, I've been to a Red Sox game and I've been to a Yankees game, and I think both times I've played the Rangers of all people.
Well, yeah. Anyways, Rich, in the co-main event on Friday Night Fights, it came down to the Argentinian Cuellar. He just wouldn't stop. He was kind of sloppy. You know, his technique was far from perfect, but he was just a mauler, and he just pulled it out on just sheer determination, and he got a knockdown, I believe, in the sixth round, if I remember right. He put down Moreno in the I think he had two knockdowns. I think one in the sixth and one in the seventh. But he just kept coming. I mean, his punches were kind of wide, but he just threw a million punches around and pulled it off. It was a very entertaining fight.
And we also had super bantamweight Alexi Collado, undefeated at 17-0. Kept that O intact there with a TKO in the fifth round over Guillermo Sanchez, who was 13-10-1. It's like time for Collado to step up in class of opponents pretty soon here. And we had the light middleweight Ed Paredes, who's 34-3-1, beats Noe Bolanos, I don't know how you pronounce that one, who's 24-9-1 now. And I guess it was an all-around good card. It was a big success, obviously. Anything associated with Mike Tyson will probably get a lot of publicity just for that fact. And this card is a really good sign of things to come. He was very wise to get in there with an established company rather than try to start from scratch. So I think most of the work was done for him already. But, you know, as long as he continues to fight the good fight against his addictions and, you know, keep that spirit in mind of taking care of the fighters, I think he'll be all right, and I think he'll be a good addition to this company, and we'll see a lot more Friday Night Fights.
You probably also read the bit of the drama when he went over and embraced Teddy Atlas, and they had a kind of their first public meeting since, I guess, going back to the 80s. And
the first time they've talked in like 20 years, I think. And the last time they talked, it was at gunpoint. So,
Well, for what it's worth, Mike said all the right things, and Teddy was very gracious in accepting the apology. So we'll go forward and hope that hope he really can make a difference.
Very shocking for him. I think he was out of it from the very first knockdown, and then he got put on the canvas again, and that was it. It was just a great showing by Gonzalez. He's got a lot of experience. Those with eight losses, they're far behind him, I guess. And he's
He's a pretty bad dude.
He's definitely a tough dude. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he does next. And actually, it was two different weight classes. It was featherweight in the main event and super bantamweight in the co-main event, but close enough. They could fight each other. But we had Leo Santa Cruz remained undefeated in his fight against Victor Terrazas. He never really was able to get off the ground much. Santa Cruz won the fight by TKO in the third round in that one. And it was just it was a little bit of a back and forth fight to begin with, but Santa Cruz just kind of had the better strategy going in and showed a little bit better defense and obviously way more power and taking out Terrazas there.
And I did read where Marais is exercising his immediate rematch. You're right. You're talking about Santa Cruz facing the winner. And when I read about that, in fact, it might have been off one of your blog posts on Facebook, with somebody's blog post on Facebook.
Could be.
And it says, you know, Marais is exercising the rematch clause, so Santa Cruz is going to have to wait a little bit longer.
Right. So we'll see what happens there, but definitely an entertaining card all around. And we also had some decent fights on the undercard. We had another knockout in the third fight. The fight just before the co-main event. Antonio Orozco was undefeated going in. He's undefeated coming out at 18-0. He beat Ivan Hernandez, who is 29-4 now. And that was a third-round knockout. And then we had Dominic Brazil, who's also undefeated still at 6-0. He also won by knockout. I guess looks like there was only one fight on this whole card that ended on a decision. And that was an eight-rounder. So it wasn't even a 12-round fight. But anyway, that was a heavyweight fight. Brazil 6-0, won by... fourth round knockout over Lenroy Thomas, who was 16-3 coming out. And then we had super bantamweights Jesus Ruiz, 30 wins, 5 losses, 5 draws. That was the only points win of the night, won in 8 rounds. Over Enrique Quevedo, he was 14-5-1. And we had a super middleweight bout between Ronald Gavril, also 6-0. He won by second round knockout over Dave Kuchain, and Kuchain's 2-3 now. Featherweights to begin the night. Joseph Diaz. It wasn't the last fight, but a couple more here. Joseph Diaz, 7-0, beat Noel Mendoza, 6-3 by third round knockout. And then finally, there was the first fight of the night. Julian Ramirez, 9-0. Won by TKO in the first round over Abraham Rubio, who's 3-1-1. So that was the first two big cards of the weekend. And then we had a big card over in Schwerin, Germany. There's Tom. Tom's back. Can you hear us now, Tom?
Yeah, everything's fine. Everything just cut out completely for a while.
And I don't know what happened there, but we were trying to ask you... on the Friday Night Fights card, did they actually film the audio, or did they get the audio of the conversation that Mike had with Teddy?
Yes. Yes. Before they talked, one of the Friday Night Fight, can't even think of his name now, but, you know, we got the Joe Tessitore and Teddy, and then the guy in the studio. But anyways, he was there live, and he talked to Tyson before and asked him what he was going to talk about and everything. And Mike says, "Well, I'm just going to go over, and we're going to start anew, and life's too short, and all this." And they covered, and they actually showed the embrace and covered everything that was said. So, very interesting.
I didn't see that part of it. I just saw on the video of the Tyson interview after the fact. They showed that they shook hands and talked, but I didn't hear any of the audio from the actual conversation, so that's interesting. But good for him, you know. Way to go. Keep up the good work, Mike. Anyway, we're just getting finished with the discussion about the Saturday fights on Showtime, I guess it was. We also had some fights over in Germany. Jürgen Brammer at light heavyweight stays on top of his game there against Stefano Abatangelo. He won by points. He improves to 41-2. Abatangelo drops to 17-3-1. He also had Arthur Abraham on the same card at super middleweight. He got another win at Germany over Wilberforce Schieppo. I'm probably butchering that name, but he's 20-7 now. Abraham improves to 37-4. And heavyweight Kubrat Pulev goes to 18-0 with a win over Tony the Tiger Thompson, 38-4. That was a points decision as well. As opposed to Saturday's fights the other Saturday fights, I guess, where all the fights but one were knockouts. All these ones seem to be decisions. And then we had Thomas Adamek in another fight, actually, at light heavyweight. Ended up in a draw. He fought Dustin Dirk. I don't know. Doesn't sound like it because this guy only has 20 wins, so I don't think it is.
Yeah, totally different. Two Thomas Adamek.
Oh, this is the one without the Z.
Yeah.
So this is a light heavyweight fight. Dustin Dirks got a draw with this one. Dirks just 27-1-1. Adamek is 20 wins, 9 losses, and 2 draws. That's about it for the major boxing stuff. I wanted to talk about this story, even though it's kind of vicious. But it does have a little bit of a Pennsylvania connection, a big Pennsylvania connection. And we don't talk about wrestling enough, so I figured I'd have one wrestling story on this show today before we get our guest, Damon Feldman, boxing promoter Damon Feldman from Tony's Neck of the Woods. But anyway, here's a story about a woman in Pennsylvania. She's being held without bail now after she was charged with murdering her baby after giving birth to the boy in a sports bar bathroom. She was actually watching a pay-per-view wrestling event with three guys in Allentown, or she's from Allentown, but this was in Lower Saucon Township, whatever the heck that is.
I know exactly where that is. In fact, I'm going to be up that way tomorrow.
Starters Pub. And this was on August 18th. She was there with three guys watching a wrestling event. She complained of back pain and headed for the restroom. And it was there that police say that she realized she was going into labor and gave birth to a premature baby boy. And even though it was a month early, the baby was otherwise healthy, according to the coroner. And this 26-year-old girl would later confess to investigators that she suffocated the child with a garbage bag and left his body inside a toilet tank. And then after this, she returned to the party after a 40-minute absence and refused to tell the men what had happened. And she reportedly continued watching the WWE SummerSlam for another hour before leaving the bar. She refused medical assistance, claiming she didn't have insurance, and none of the men had any idea she was pregnant. And then a cleaning crew didn't find the body until the next day. And obviously the identity of the father remains unknown. No surprise there. But she is subsequently arrested and charged with the intentional killing of a child under the age of 12. And if convicted, she faces a possible death sentence. The worst part about this is that Pennsylvania has a safe haven law, which would have allowed her to turn her child over to a hospital free of legal consequence. So totally despicable there. Also, she could not miss too much of the freaking pay-per-view wrestling match. Goes in and gives birth and kills her baby and comes back out to hang out with the guys. Just disgusting. But, you know, it's unfortunate we have to cover that story on a combat sports show like this, but shame on this woman. That's totally despicable. And I hope she does get the death penalty, because that is just nuts. I wasn't aware that Pennsylvania had the death penalty, but...
Oh, yeah. We got it.
Well, that's the perfect case for it.
Yeah. I'm actually a fan of it, you know. I'm a little tough
part of a guy. I used to be against it. I actually did a big debate in political science in high school about it. And, now I kind of changed my mind about it, but I really only think it needs to be used for certain circumstances. At the time that I was against it, I was more concerned with people who were actually innocent, you know, on death row. And it has happened that people have been executed that have later been found to be innocent. And during my research, I also found out there's a couple states, I think still in Utah, they have it on the books that any death sentence is carried out by a firing squad. Some states still do hanging, but most of the states do lethal injection.
Yeah, I think it's like someone in Utah or somebody has a firing squad or something.
Yeah.
Because I was reading about it, because I know recently a person elected for it.
Hmm.
You know, they made the choice, and he took the firing squad. The reason I believe the death penalty is, I can't believe we're talking about this on Combat Sports, but up to the point, my thoughts is, this is part of the story we were just discussing. I look at it like this. I don't think my taxpayer dollars that I work hard and, you know, and pay out of my pocket while I was going to the office 40 hours a week should be used to keep somebody for life. Okay, I'm giving you 12 life sentences. Okay, that means you're going to rot there to the day you die. Or life and no possibility of parole. You're going to rot there to the day you die.
All right, we're back. Got an introduction and everything, Tom. Tom's back with us, too. We got Psychic Tom on the line. We got Damon Feldman here. And I don't know what's going on with Blog Talk Radio tonight, but their whole site is having issues. So hopefully this will be the last time we have to call in. But Damon, you and Tony were talking about the Valley Forge fights there. So I guess you can continue that line of conversation there, and we'll...
Damon, I was going to ask you what you thought of the card last week. I know it was kind of hard with two of the featured fights getting canceled at the last minute. Naeem Nelson breaking his hand, and Kamara Pagley, who I said earlier is a friend of mine, who I actually got the tickets from, his fight pulling out at the last minute, which dropped it from 7 fights to 5. But I mean,
Kamara.
It was an entertaining show. I mean, I love just going to live fights.
Yeah, you said you were friends with Kamara?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, real nice guy. I actually went to hopefully see him fight and didn't have an opponent. So I was hoping to have him on one of the cards. I thought the fight card was okay. I mean, you know, Travis Kaufman definitely has a lot more to offer than what he showed. I think it was the opponent, you know, maybe made him look bad. But, my brother's actually involved in those fights too. So, you know, it's good. I thought it was pretty good put together card anyway. I thought that Miguel Tarantino, I believe his name is, was pretty good hands, but I thought he should knock the guy out. But,
I think Miguel did. I think Miguel got too much into the crowd. I was at the Valley Forge just a couple weeks ago. A friend of mine, he was having a celebration there, and I met a couple of Miguel's followers that were just a couple girls that were there just trying to get people to come back in a few weeks for the fight, and they just happened to see me there, and I told them I already planned to be there, and his fans were getting them so hyped up. I remember writing in my report, and I think I'll Facebook it to you. The one thing I said on there was, you know, I think he was smothering his punches. He was coming in so wild, and the guy was tall with long arms, and I know Miguel wanted to fight him in close, but not that close. He was
his
bomb, but he wasn't giving himself enough room to land him.
Yeah, I figure 100% on that, because he should have knocked that guy out. I mean, he hurt the guy a couple times, dropped him.
He got him hurt. I mean, he had him hurt pretty good, but if you have and I do remember because I wrote the note in there that he had the guy hurt pretty bad in the third. He had him hurt throughout the fourth, but in about the last 15, 20 seconds of the fourth round, that guy, Melendez, I think his name was starting to land a few counter punches, and he
had
success at the end. But obviously, I mean, Miguel was way ahead on the cards. The guy I enjoyed the most, and for doing the boxing journalism, because I've done it all. I mean, I boxed, I helped train guys, and now I do the journalism facet of it.
Right.
And it was one of the few times I ever wrote a fight report in reverse. Usually I start with the main event, because that's your bread and butter. Harry Yurgi fought me the last two times, I would find an angle to put on there, like the first one. Like, he's fighting 2 minutes from his house, and he had to be excited about that. The second one was, the sequel was better than the original, like The Empire Strikes Back. Well, this one, I really was having a hard time finding an angle with the main event, so I started writing the article with the opening bout. I put this down at the bottom, but I wrote the article in reverse, and I started with the Khalid Whitmore fight, because he was cracking me up.
I walked in on the last two fights at the end of the late. I hear you, man.
He's a guy he's easy to root for because, you know, he was entertaining walking to the ring. The fight was entertaining for the 52 seconds it lasted. But he was so likable on the way out of the ring, and I was right on the aisle there. I go to snap a photo. He stops. He's like, "You want to be in it?" Okay, I thought there was somebody, and he's joking around, and he's got this big afro on and sunglasses. I'm like,
nice.
This guy is easy to root for because he's so fan-friendly.
Well, that's what boxing needs, man. You may need personalities here. Sort of like a dying sport, but then you get around like a Mayweather fight, you know, the hype gets there. Klitschko's, you know, the champion, the big-name champions overseas. I mean, nothing really to follow in boxing right now. Philadelphia is a hotbed for boxing. I mean, like the Blue Horizon is not there anymore. You know, there's no venue. I'm trying to get a venue that will be like the Philadelphia boxing location. That's what Philly needs. I mean, you got Danny Garcia, you got Bernard Hopkins, you got several other contenders, you know, but they're all fighting everywhere else. They're not fighting in Philadelphia. And it's really a shame for the sport.
Exactly. I remember even a couple of years ago, even when the Blue was still in operation, there was. Your local fight card there, and I know Charles Brewer, when he first won the title, made a point to bring a title fight to the Blue.
He fought Joey DeGrandis.
He had a few ESPN cards, but for the most part, I remember the biggest Philadelphia card in a long time was when David Reed, about 2 years after he won the Olympic gold, he fought at the Temple Apollo at the time against Simon.
He knocked out Simon Brown, right?
Yeah, and Shane Mosley was on the card, and that was a good card.
Yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, I mean, then, you know, Hopkins came back, and then he fought not too long ago at the Tesla place as well. I've done seven shows at the Wachovia Spectrum, and the biggest crowd we had was, like, about 4,500. We brought in, like, Butterbean. You had, like, you know, a lot of locals on the card.
I was at that card. That was, Butterbean fought on the card because he interviewed him, and I asked him about that because I know was he fighting on Jamie Campbell that night?
Yeah, exactly.
Jamie Campbell, who was a former tough man, and I didn't know Jamie personally, but you might even know my cousin because my cousin used to play on the tough man circuit, Tony Orlando from Glendale.
Oh, yeah, Tony, great guy. I just saw him last week at his bar, the radio show last week. He was a tough guy. He fought Campbell.
Tony already emailed me the night before because he invited me to come down, but I didn't get the email to that day when I was at work, and I already had plans for that night. But, yeah, Howie Roseman was there, and I think you said Barrett Brooks from the Eagles was there.
Yeah, a bunch of guys, man. Henry Reese does a great job. And
Henry,
the other guy.
Henry. And what was funny is, in fact, you probably even saw it if you were looking. There's a picture of me when I was 19, when I was still fighting, and that was on the wall with my 1996 mullet going.
That's cool, man. I saw the picture. I didn't really attach it because I don't want to interrupt anybody, but how many fights did you have?
Well, I fought strictly in the amateurs. I never turned pro.
Okay.
What happened was I was fighting on the college circuit at the time. And then I had one Lock Haven University.
Yeah.
And I had one semester to go, and I couldn't box anymore. My eligibility was up, so I was horsing around. I was playing football with friends of mine, and I severely tore ligaments in my right hand. That put me on the shelf for 18 months. I came back from that. I went back down to Marian Anderson Rec Center, started training there again. Yeah, I mean, I fought down Marian Anderson for years, and then I broke my
head
doing road work. And then I was coming back a couple years later, and I was going to be the chief sparring partner for Willie the Gladiator Gibbs. Before he fought
Gibbs, I'm wrong.
Miranda, he had one fight before that when he won, like, the USBA title. I think it was up in Connecticut. Well, I was going to be his chief sparring partner because I was a mimic of his opponent's style. And about a month before training camp, I ruptured my appendix on vacation.
Wow, man. That is something. Do you just the reps? Who trained you down, Marian Anderson? Elvin Thompson?
I used to train him with Elvin. My main trainer down there was Kevin Burwell.
Yeah, Kevin, nice guy. I met him. I remember him. I was several people fighting from that gym next card. They got Keisha Williams is going to fight.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin really took interest in me when a lot of people really didn't want much to do with me. I was kind of starting out. I'd lost my first amateur fight up in college, and he happened to be working with my dad at the time. And my dad showed him a couple tapes, and it was like, you know, this kid needs a lot of work. He's a short, stocky kid. You know, he's powerful, but he's got no technique. And he's almost like a street brawler out there, and it ain't going to work. So Kevin brought me out into the gym like there was nobody else, you know, was really interested in me because they didn't think I was going to make it. And he just sat there and goes, you know, we got to break your seat. I know you got a couple more fights this year, and we're going to do the best you can because I was like, you know, the freshman in college. And I did pretty good. You know, I was the first fight, you know, I got beat. I got stopped. The other fights, you know, I fought guys that were in the open class, and I was competitive, but not at the level to beat them yet. But it was a good experience. And then that summer, when I was 18, he literally broke my style down. And there would be days that we would go over the same routine for about 2.5 hours, literally footwork. And then how to block jabs, how to slip jabs, how to get inside, because I'm a short guy. And then it helped me. It helped me a lot. And then Rev came in, and Rev brought more aggressiveness to my style. And then later, Jimmy Arthur came in, and Jimmy, who passed away a few years ago, he was instrumental on because for a right-handed guy, I was strictly a left hooker. And they said, man, you need to develop a right hand. I mean, I used to drop guys with the right hand because they'd be looking for my left hook, and it would be like a sucker punch. And then he was the guy that tied the rope between my feet, just like Mookie did to Rocky. And it worked. That's how I developed the right hand. And unfortunately, right after I developed the right hand, I tore the ligaments in that hand.
Wow.
I'm not happy to be involved in the sport any way I can anymore. You know, I train. I have like a little basement gym now, and I'll bring some teenagers in here and there just to get them from running around and causing trouble, and I'll train them, you know, just for fun because I know their parents as a favor to them. And you know, before I go any further, I got to ask you this one because I know you know your father. You know, he was a very popular trainer, and obviously, probably his most famous client was Prince Charles Williams.
Well, he had him and Frank the Animal Fletcher. I don't know if you remember that. And my dad also trained He also trained Dave Tiberi for the James Toney match, which Tiberi was robbed. So my dad kept him.
One of the worst decisions in boxing history.
Dave
won probably 9 of those 12 rounds, easy.
Yeah, no, it was a disgusting decision.
But, in fact, speaking of Frank Fletcher, my dad used to train with his brother Troy, his youngest brother, and my dad.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Yeah, my dad helped out in Troy's corner a few times. He
was a nice guy. Troy, 40, they called him. Remember 40?
Yes, I do remember that. I remember, like, late in his career, he was playing with the Paul Spataflores, and, he wasn't his two brothers. He wasn't, an animal like Frank, and he wasn't slick like Anthony.
No, exactly. He was weird. He was a unique guy. He fought, I think I fought on the card. He fought Boogaloo Jones. It was 1993, so it was one of my last. So I stopped it. I was 9-0. I got injured in accident, just lost interest, got into promoting, and started doing all the celebrity fights and stuff like that. But, man. I mean, listen, by his thing, man. People got to understand boxing, man. Boxing helps people's lives. It helps changes people's lives for the better. Like, the discipline, offense. It's just, boxing is a sport and there's no pensions or anything. These guys train every day. And they may, for anywhere from working off ticket sales to, a few hundred hours to a few thousand until they make it big time. We need more people to get involved here, man,
I know, going to some cards myself over the years and everything and just meeting a lot of the guys and talking to guys. I remember when I was a teenager in the early 90s, I was running around and I was getting into some mischief, nothing bad, but only because of the fact I didn't have an identity. I wanted to be, other people in school were great athletes. I played football, but I was a backup, and I was a spot starter. And I wanted, so that didn't help. And then, I wasn't the greatest student, and I didn't have a car, and I wanted something to stand out. So I would get in fights just because people would recognize me, people would talk about me.
Oh yeah.
And then now that I think about it, I'd like to go back to that 1993 and slap myself in the mouth for being stupid like that, because of how baby it really was. When I started boxing in '94, and then I started training in Philly every night with Kevin down at Marian Anderson. I'd come home, I'd be tired. But also have a sense of accomplishment that I was doing something good. And then I felt confident in myself. I'm like, I don't got to go on the street and prove nothing to nobody. If I want to prove to somebody how much of a badass I am, I tell them to buy a ticket and come see me fight. And I got a lot more satisfaction doing that. That's what I preach to kids now. And I'll bring a couple teenagers over. Some of them think they're bad. Some of them are tough. And I'll show them the heavy bag. And I'll say, okay, you're angry. You had a bad day. You want to just be angry and get into trouble? Hit that bag. And then they keep hitting it. Keep hitting it. The bag wants more. You haven't made it quit yet. Keep hitting it. And then by the time they're done, they're tired. They're taking off. They're full of sweat. And they want to go home and they want to lay down. They ain't going to run the streets anymore.
100%.
And that bag is going to be there tomorrow waiting for you, and it don't carry a gun, it don't run in a gang, it ain't going to call the cops on you, and it's just going to be back waiting for you the next day when you're angry all over again.
Exactly. That's a great point to have it. And, boxing, the kids should get into, man, because it just, it helps the violence. All this violence out there in the city, we're working with Chester. The thing is if these guys are in the boxing ring or in a boxing gym, they don't want to do violence. It just takes the aggression out.
Yeah, that and the fact is, you get a lot of these kids, obviously they're in bad areas, they're in inner city areas, and they want to get away from that temptation because they see a potential future. I know, guys like Danny Garcia and other guys, that were brought up in, rough areas, and what kept them away from the gangs because they see a potential. Hey, I can go to the Olympics. Hey, I can get a professional career. Like on the Floyd Mayweather card, he's making a nice chunk of money for that. And
he's already making $1.5 million a fight. He's probably making $2.5 to $3 million. I mean, he's fighting. He's not in. I say Garcia knocks this guy out. I have just a feeling. or B. I don't know about Knox. You know, this guy is tough. I think Garcia's going to win it. But I can't see this guy beating Garcia. I think Garcia's too hyped up. He's too ready. He's a flashy guy. He can really crack, man. I think he either knocks him out or wins. He's definitely going to win a decision, I think. But if Lucas knocks him out, I'm not surprised. But what a hell of a fight that is, man. That's two guys. You got to give Garcia all the credit, man. The guy's stepping up, man. He's Billy Bourne. He's stepping up to the plate. And this is no joke.
How long are you going to fight this guy?
Hey, I think, I don't know if it's guaranteed. You know, you may know better than me. I think after this, he gets the winner to Mayweather. I think Mayweather wins. I think Mayweather's going to be too. I just think Mayweather's way too smart. You know, this dude is a very good, he's an animal. But the thing is, this is Mayweather, man. This guy's intelligent. He knows how to beat you down. You know, I say he busts him up. You know, he'll win a 12-round decision. I don't think it's going to be tough. Hard. It's going to be hard, I'm sorry. First five rounds, it's going to be crucial, man. I mean, the guy can punch. Yeah. You know, it's Mayweather, man. It's going to be tough.
Well, the way I'm seeing it, because I always write a big preview article when the fights are about to happen, so I usually write it about a week beforehand. And I always put down, like, the strengths, the weaknesses, the styles, some of the best fights. And I let it. I'll put it in my little computer in my little head up here, and I let it kick out a result. And the result that keeps coming to me right now is saying Mayweather in 10. And you're right. I think Canelo's really going to put a lot of pressure early, and he's going to try to use that size. But I saw in the Austin Trout fight that when he comes straight in, the guy gives him a little bit of movement, it befuddles him a little bit. And Mayweather will do that. And I can see the straight right hand landing and starting to, you know, bust Canelo up a little bit and then tenderizing him just enough that they'll stop it around the 10th. That's just what my mind is telling me right now.
And I agree with you. I think it's just he's too smart. I mean, look, he has 44 fights Canelo does. But don't forget, how many world really championship competitors can he really fight? Maybe six? You know what I mean? Trout's a good fighter, but he's nowhere even close to Mayweather. You know what I mean? Like, the whole other level, man. I mean, but, you know, look, you know, Canelo's an animal. I mean, you know, he's gonna definitely try hard, man. I'll tell you, we can go on and on talking about this, man. I only have a few minutes, but I really appreciate being on, man. I know we can, you know, talk about games.
I just want to ask you one question before you go, because I told Rich and I told Tom about this before, and I'm sure you'll remember it. We're talking about Prince Charles Williams. Do you remember his first fight with Murky Sosa when the doctor stopped the fight and called it a draw after seven rounds because they were beating each other up?
I thought they didn't they call it a double TKO?
Yes. That was the first time in history.
Yeah, the referee stopped. They both took too many punishment, and it was a war. And I thought, and they fought the rematch and chose to stop them, I think, then. But that was a war, man, down at the Bally's Park. I was a kid then, but I remember that.
Yeah, because you're only a little bit older than I am, and I was still in my early teens when that happened. But I just wanted to bring up that great memory because I tell these guys about it all the time.
That was something else.
Now, Damon, you got anything coming up that you want to promote? You want to get out there or tell people how to find you online and all that stuff?
Yeah, sure, man. My website, you know, Champions Up Tomorrow, but it's cotboxing.com. It's C as in cat, O as in outstanding, T as in Tom, boxing.com. You know, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, all over the place. We just got the fights coming up. I'm doing a fight for autism, which I'm really excited about. A lot of locals just stepping in the ring to help autism. It's a big charity towards me. And also, our next Champions of Tomorrow event is October 10th, and the main event is Tim Witherspoon Jr. And we're real excited about that. It's our new fight place at the Bamboo Bar Nightclub. And we'll be going every 7 weeks, so we're real excited. And, you know, working on Meldrick's movie. Here he has his book out, and just, you know, a lot of things going on now. So, you know, thank God for this, and keep awesome.
Well, definitely keep in touch. You can send us any PR at info@unlimitedfightnews.com.
Yes.
And you got my phone number, I think, or I got yours at least, so.
Yeah, definitely. The taller, you guys hit me up on Facebook, please. That would be great. And, no, I really appreciate being on. Great show and great conversation with you guys.
Thanks a lot.
I'm going to send you some stuff tonight, too.
Yeah, hit me on Facebook. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
All right.
All right, bye-bye.
So, yeah, there's Damon Feldman. Didn't really get too much of an opportunity to ask him about his celebrity boxing connections there, but we got a lot in for the time we had. Unfortunately, we had the technical difficulties thrown into the whole operation. Yeah, I was going to break in, but you guys were having such a bromance going on there. I didn't want to...
I know the fake game, you jerk. I made our show entertaining tonight.
Yeah.
I brought technical expertise when you were having technical difficulties.
All right. I forgive you. Anyway.
Okay. Well, you better. I'm a tornado.
I wanted to mention at one point that I was looking at Damon's record, his boxing record. He actually went 9-0 before. I could think he had an accident, a car accident or something. And,
yeah, I remember that. Okay.
But he went 9-0 and fought 8 of his 9 fights at the Blue Horizon. So he did mention the Blue Horizon, but he kind of left that out. And just for shits and giggles, I was looking through the record, and I clicked on the name of his last opponent, who was Terry Crawley. And believe it or not, he is one of only 4 people to ever beat another guy who's got some relatives in the fight game. His name is Kevin Rooney. I've got it connected to Mike Tyson, too, who started off our broadcast tonight there with his little audio clip. And coincidentally enough, he also fought Dickie Eklund, was related to none other than Mickey Ward. And,
6 degrees of separation.
Part of the Fighter movie.
And Terry had a big connection to Massachusetts. He was based in Hyannis, where I spent some summers. I fought at the old Cape Cod Coliseum in South Yarmouth. I used to drive by there every day. And he also fought in my hometown of Dorchester at a place called Freeport Hall, right around the corner from my old house, believe it or not. So that's pretty amazing to find that kind of connection. And it's the last guy he fought. So I guess we were meant to talk at some point. But Damon's a good guy. He's had his bad history. He's had his ups and downs, of course, like anybody. But it's always one consistent thing is the Philadelphia area and boxing for him. I guess 2 consistent things. And he's always remained true to his roots, and you know, I would have another chance to ask him some more about his fighting family there, his father and his brother there, and what that was like growing up in the family business and becoming a success with it, and kind of branching off there into fantasy boxing or celebrity boxing, I should say. Must have been pretty interesting for him. And I wonder what would have happened if Rodney King had become a boxer before he became a celebrity. Pseudo celebrity. Interesting. And, of course, Octomom would have been some good conversation. And I know he had some issues with her not showing up to fight or something like that. They had a big to-do about her participation. I think they ended up firing her at some point. But anyway, we do have plenty of other stuff to cover. We've got, of course, big UFC event happened last night down there in, I guess it was in Indianapolis, Indiana. It was, I thought it was going to be a different situation last week. That's why I didn't preview it. We got September and August. But I figured it out before the event, and I did get to watch it. And we had Carlos Condit in the main event. No surprise, he got his revenge. Beat Martin Campman, round 4 by TKO. Martin got cut up bad. I mean, probably one of the worst set of cuts I've seen on a guy. just had holes in his face, basically. So it kind of goes to show you what can happen.
Yeah, I think Martin looked good in the first round, and then from then on, he was just picked apart. And I guess the question is, where does he go from here?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Tom was just about to say something. He got disconnected. Anyway, we'll see if we can get him back somehow here. Mute him and unmute him. Maybe that'll work. Anyway, Kampman was bleeding all over the place, and he actually had a similar situation in his last fight, and he came back and won. So I was kind of thinking maybe once he sees the blood, he'll come out of the closet there and start fighting, and just didn't do it. Just couldn't muster an offense in the last round there, and I thought it was kind of fitting the way it ended. It was like, you know, he was not only beaten, but exhausted. And he just basically got put right on his ass against the cage. I think it was a knee that was the final strike on him and just dropped to the mat. And Herb Dean stepped in and stopped it. But I don't think Carlos Condit really made a case for being in a title fight again anytime soon. I think he's definitely, he kind of overestimated his ability going into this. And he had made a comment before the fight saying, "I feel bad for anybody who has to fight me right now." So it kind of made you think, you know, he's expecting an early knockout, and it took him four rounds to beat Kampman. Kampman's no slouch or anything, but, you know, with a guy who brags like that, you think he'd really come out there and demolish him. And he really didn't show anything new to me. You know, I'd hate to sound like Dana White, being the guy who never fought MMA in my life and criticizing the guy but who won. You know, but I would have liked to see more out of Carlos, and I think he can deliver more, so... I think he's going to need at least one more fight before he gets another title shot and be able to make the most of that. But the co-main event was a real back-and-forth battle. Donald Cerrone ended up losing by unanimous decision to Rafael Dos Anjos. And let's see if Tom's back. Tom, can you hear us now?
All right, now we're back. Okay.
I had to mute you and then unmute you to get you to work again. But what did you think of the Condit and Cerrone fights there?
Well, Carlos had said he wanted to work on his wrestling. And if you noticed in the clinch work, he was good at stopping the takedown because Martin seemed like it was a, you know, one-note Johnny. I mean, he just didn't want to even try to deal with Carlos on his feet. And I kind of questioned that. But you've seen how good Martin looked in the first round, which I gave Martin the first round. And from then on, Carlos just took over. And I think that he has improved his wrestling, but whether it's at the level to really hold off a Hendrick or a GSP, I would have to question that. So I think he's got a ways to go before he gets his next title shot. I think he's one or two fights away from that, in my, you know, my opinion.
Right.
And I guess... And also the question is, can Kampman really resurrect his career this deep into it? Because to me, after a night like that, it almost seems like he's going back to the drawing board. Because if you remember his background, he was a kickboxer. And it seemed like his stand-up, even though he was being beat on the feet, it was the way he was being beat. I mean, it almost like he was, I don't know, something was just missing with him. So I think he really came up short last night in more ways than one. Time will tell.
Well, Kampman actually, you know, his last fight with, I think it was Thiago Alves, if I remember correctly, he came back after getting cut up almost as bad, not quite as bad as he did the other night, last night. But, you know, he's one of those guys you can never count out, so I don't think he's going to fade away anytime soon. I think he's always going to be in these type of competitive fights. But just the fact that he got to the fourth round in a fight like this, I thought was pretty impressive. And I think we'll see more of him. He got a Fight of the Night bonus, too. I think that he is the main event, the Fight of the Night. So, you know, I guess that'll help him pay for all the stitches he's going to need.
Yeah, exactly.
Brutal cut. But anyway, co-main event was Rafael Dos Anjos versus Donald Cerrone. And actually, Cerrone was in the news. I don't know if we ended up talking about it, but he had a boat rage incident I had in the notes for last week. He got caught up in arguing with a guy over a little boating fender bender and ended up getting arrested over it, I think, just before this fight. So maybe that distracted him. But anyway, he lost a unanimous decision to Dos Anjos. Both guys have been around for a while. They'll be around for a long while still, I think. And it was an interesting co-main event, and I kind of zoned out on it because it was so back and forth. And a lot of these fights, the main card fights anyway, it seemed more like kickboxing matches in a cage than MMA fights.
Mm-hmm.
There was so much fighting on the feet in this card. And, you know, they had some submissions here and there, but I thought it was really unique the way a lot of these fights unfolded. I didn't start watching until the Brad Tavares and Bubba McDaniel fight there. Actually, I think a lot of the bonuses came through on the undercard. Brandon Thatch got the knockout of the night, and Zach Cummings got the submission of the night on Ben Holloway. I didn't see either of those fights. But Dos Anjos definitely showed he's still in it to win it, and he did a great job there against the guy who's one of the Jackson Camp loyalists down there in Arizona. He was in the documentary we talked about with Landon Dykstra House a few weeks ago. He's a career MMA guy, so it's always a shock to see him drop a big decision like that. He had his moments, but just couldn't do enough with Dos Anjos.
Well, I was really impressed with Dos Anjos' stand-up game. I mean, it was very sharp, very crisp. Great movement. Right. I mean, you notice there just wasn't, like you were saying, there just was not too much happening on the ground. And from Dos Anjos' standpoint, if I'm in his corner, say, hey, why change success? Keep it standing.
Right. Then we had the Ultimate Fighter last season's winner, Calvin Gastelum, back in action against Brian Melanson. Melanson or Melanson, I don't know how you'd actually pronounce that. But, Brian has had a successful early career, just like Gastelum, but I think, actually, I did criticize their pairing of Gastelum with Paulo Thiago, and then Thiago ended up getting hurt, so they put Melanson in there, but... after watching Gastelum put the rear naked choke on and finish this fight so early in the first round here, I guess maybe that wasn't such a mismatch putting him against Thiago. Maybe that's the kind of competition he needs. And he is being underestimated. But, man, that was a very impressive submission, seeing as he kind of got it sunk before he even hit the ground. He had his arm at least around his neck, and then once he hit the ground, he just kind of tight it.
Yeah, I just loved his transition from the stand-up mindset to the ground mindset, because it was a great punch combination that put him down, and he didn't hesitate at all. He just moved quick, so once again, he was impressive.
And he actually has a... guy we've had on the show a few times on his fight history, Bill Smallwood, beat him back in July of 2012 by the same move, rear naked choke. So definitely likes that submission. And he said mostly stoppages. Only one fight he had a decision in was against Uriah Hall in the finale of the Ultimate Fighter 17. So looking forward to seeing how he develops, but it's very impressive so far. See how he keeps going with that. Then we had the main fight that seemed like a kickboxing match in a cage, Gordon McGee versus Robert Whittaker. McGee's another Ultimate Fighter guy. He won a split decision against Whittaker, and these two guys hammering away at each other, mostly boxing. There's only a few kicks here and there, but you know, they were headhunting, and McGee had some big bruises, some lacerations there on his face, and Whittaker was just, you know, kept coming at him, kept going back and forth there in that one, and that was a very entertaining little war there. But McGee ended up winning the split decision. Then we had Takeya Mizugaki fighting for a long time. His first fight out of Japan in a long time, I should say. Against Eric Perez, and he won a split decision there. That fight was brutal. A lot of punishment given and taken in that one. A tough fight for Takeya to win. He actually ended up getting stunned a few times in the early going, but worked out a win there by split decision. And the first fight that I saw of the night was Brad Tavares versus Bubba McDaniel. Geez, you got to feel bad for a guy like Bubba. I mean, he ended up going into the Ultimate Fighter as the heavy favorite. He had the most experience. He got the wild card and couldn't take advantage of it. And just, you know, you'd hope that he could put it all together in the UFC once he got there. He did get a chance to do it. And I don't think he's going to get cut, but if he loses again, it's almost a guarantee. If Dana doesn't decide eventually to cut him before he gets another fight, type talent. You know, it seems like he has all the talent, the physique, the ability. He just can't put it all together. Kind of like the same thing happened to Uriah Hall. And it's also, I think, a matter of, you know, putting him up against the right opponent, maybe get a little confidence going in him. Seems like every time they put him in the cage, it's against somebody that they know is going to be able to beat him. And I thought it was very competitive with Tavares, but McDaniel really only exploded in the last round.
Yeah, I think he made a good comeback, but you know, as you were saying, he has all the tools, but something is missing, and that something may be what's between his ears. I kind of noticed some things on the show there. I mean, I know I make a big deal out of this head stuff, but it's very important, as you guys know. And I don't know, maybe he needs it.
It's like you've got to get the fire under the ass and the killer instinct all at once. And it seemed like it really took a big pep talk for him to go out there in the third round and do what he did to try and win. But even then, he really didn't seem to the point where he was, you know, in a mode of urgency that he knew he had to finish the guy instead of just going out there and winning.
Exactly. And my whole point is, the time to work on stuff like that is not between the second and the third round. I mean, this is something that I think he needs to acknowledge, that he needs some help in that area. Nothing wrong with that. Hey, a lot of guys do. And if he would give it a shot there, because I would agree, he has good tools. He has good technique. He seems to, you know, show up conditioned, but he just can't get it together. Can't finish the deal. So,
and
here we go.
Unfortunately, it seems like the announcers can't even get his name right. They kept calling him McDaniels, which happened a lot on the show. Poor guy, I can't even get people to call him by the right name. I guess they, you know, Bubba is easy enough for the first name, but you know, people kind of want to put the F on the McDaniel there all the time.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
That.
But anyway, we also had another tough 17 contestant, Dylan Andrews, on this card. He fought Papi Abedi, won by knockout in the third round with at the 132 mark. We had Brandon Thatch, like I said, we got the knockout of the night over Justin Edwards, first round knockout at the 123 mark, 1 minute, 23 seconds from knees and punches. We had Darren Elkins beat Hatsu Hayoki by unanimous decision. Jason High beat James Head by guillotine choke in the first round there. Zach Cummings beat Ben Alloway by Brabo choke. I've also heard it called the Darce choke. I'm not sure exactly what it was, which one is correct there. But that fight I did read about, apparently Alloway almost had Cummings in his own submission hold, and Cummings got out and ended up winning the fight with just 40 seconds left in the first round. And then the first fight of the night ended up in a no contest due to the knee that was thrown to the head of the grounded fighter. And we just talked about that a few weeks ago. There's a new rule now that the ref can allow that in certain situations if he thinks the fighter's putting his hand on the mat just to avoid it. I don't think this was one of those situations, so they called it a no contest. And that's that. We also have a big fight coming up this weekend. UFC 164, is it? I think so.
164, right.
But we'll talk about that a little later. We got a ton of other stuff to talk about. Wanderlei Silva versus Chael Sonnen. Seems like it's going to be not going to happen for a long time. Sonnen is talking about fighting Phil Davis now. Phil obviously is not going to execute a rematch there with what's his name? The karate guy. The karate kid.
Machida.
Drawing a blank. But anyway, so Phil Davis might fight Sonnen, we don't know yet, but Silva's going to be out until January of next year, so that fight's not going to happen this year.
Well, for what I read,
Mayhem Miller back in the news.
He can't even start training.
Twice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if there's anything worse than a pissed off MMA fighter, it's a pissed on MMA fighter. Well, this is a crazy story. Obviously, Mayhem Miller is a little whack to begin with. He's had his incidences, but he's been in sort of a very bizarre domestic violence dispute here with his girlfriend, significant other, or stalker, or whatever the heck she is. But she's an MMA fighter, too. So it adds kind of a different dimension to the whole thing. But he was arrested twice this last month for domestic violence. And this latest one, apparently his father even witnessed some of it. And he apparently pissed on the woman. So not only beat her up, but he peed on her. So that's pretty bad shit. But anyway, he was arrested on a felony charge of corporal injury of spouse. And now he's on the hook for $100,000, $50,000 for each incident. Very crazy story there. But there's enough physical evidence on the victim for the charge to go through. So apparently whatever damage she did, if any, was negligible. And it wasn't visible anyway. So pretty bizarre case there. But Mayhem says his father witnessed her harassment or whatever, and he just retaliated. But, you know, this is a guy who also got in trouble for putting his sister in a headlock at a party and not letting go. So family doesn't necessarily mean much to this guy if you really need it. Anyway, we talked about Mike Tyson a little bit at the beginning of the show. And as I said, there's only one news outlet that reported that this is his sixth day of sobriety. When he was interviewed, he said that in an interview during this card in New York. So very interesting stuff. I hope he overcomes that. But that's just in my notes here, so I figured I'd mention that again. Let's see what else we got here. Riddick Bowe back in the news. Just talked about him before the show went live, but you know, Riddick must have been watching this whole Tito Ortiz Rampage Jackson thing where they just signed these big contracts with Bellator to do MMA and wrestling. Because now Riddick Bowe wants to go from boxing then to Muay Thai, and now he wants to go to wrestling. He wants to, I guess, repeat the legacy of Joe Louis, unfortunately. The former two-time world champion went 43-1-1 in his career and apparently decides he wants to be a pro wrestler. And, of course, he tried to get into the business with a Twitter tweet. Says, looking to get into pro wrestling partners. Contact my manager if you can help. I want to be the first heavyweight boxing champion and heavyweight wrestling champion. I have trained hard with those bumps. So apparently he's not going to go back to Muay Thai, even though he sounded like he was going to keep up with it after a big beating at the hands of Levgen Golovkin, who really demolished him, mostly with leg kicks, till both fell down and fight was stopped. But, you know, Rampage wants to get into boxing. He's already in wrestling, so might make a good move to throw him in there with Riddick Bowe. And then they can box afterwards. But, I talked about a little bit about that boxing wedding there, the New York wedding that Mike Tyson crashed. And it was actually as he was crossing the lawn of the Turning Stone Resort Casino in Verona, New York. And Greg and Amber Keller were snapping photos with their bridesmaids and groomsmen on Friday. And Keller said Tyson stopped, posed for photographs, congratulated the happy bride and groom on their union, and was extremely nice. And it supposedly energized the evening celebrations. So he was quite the entertainment. And we talked a little bit about Eddie Alvarez the last couple of weeks, his whole situation with Bellator going back to them. Now he's on the November 2nd pay-per-view card. Apparently he wants the media to STFU, a.k.a. shut the fuck up about his situation. He's actually came out in public and said, recently there's been speculation in the media regarding my settlement with Bellator. The settlement is involved and complicated and contains many contingencies. The terms of the settlement are confidential, and neither I nor my representatives are going to release these terms to anyone. The speculations which have been printed are just that, speculations, and could not possibly be completely accurate, as the settlement is over 40 pages long. I would suggest that these speculations are helping no one and respectfully request that they cease immediately. All I want to do is fight. This is kind of ironic since Alvarez has been doing most of the talking in this whole situation. But he had a chance to get on a big forum with Ariel Helwani and Bjorn Redney. But Bjorn Redney actually declined the opportunity to put their dirty laundry out in the public while each side was, you know, having lawyers fight it out in the courtroom. But anyway, he wants to focus on his fight now with Michael Chandler, and that's it. And a story about Manny Pacquiao, a couple stories about Manny this week. Latest story I read was yesterday, said that he has a possible sprained ankle from, guess what, basket. And I know from watching some of the All Access stuff in whatever the HBO show was, I forget it now, they haven't done it in so long. Prior to his fights, you know, they had the documentary-style previews there. And they always talked about how Freddie Roach hated the fact that Manny played so much basketball. Well, now it's come back to haunt him. He's got an ankle injury. Sprained ankle, supposedly, nothing serious. But, you know, the article kind of, it was surprising to me, but the article was like, well, he could still play basketball. Never mind that, if he's going to be able to box. You didn't really talk about that. Well, he could still play basketball. But anyway, the other story is he's reportedly on the brink of bankruptcy after losing most of his money to election campaigns and other expenditures. But this might not be an accurate story because his family is saying it's not true. This is an associate of his that said that he spent about $9 million on campaign funds. And this associate said he lost all of his money, a lot of it through charitable works as well. People say he just doesn't know how to refuse these causes. But this is making him more than ever, motivated more than ever to fight because he realizes he's losing more money now than ever. But at the same time, there are also reports showing that he controls billions of dollars worth of assets. So if he has to cash out somewhere, he can find a way, I'm sure. But his chief of staff believes all these allegations and rumors and all that are triggered by his sale of a Mediterranean-style mansion in Los Angeles. But also explained that he's only selling that property at $2.7 million because nobody's actually living there and property taxes are pretty high. And covering an unoccupied house makes that even worse. So anyway, he'll be back in the ring November 23rd against Brandon Rios. And we'll see how he does. The other story in the news the last couple of weeks is Freddie Roach has apparently been given the authority to pull him out of that fight if he doesn't think he's ready. And also, he also has been reported to have the authority to tell Pacquiao when it's over, his career is over. He's going to be the one to decide that. So, interesting. We got Ben Askren, of course, back in the news. Has been in the news the last couple weeks for some back and forth there between Dana White and Bjorn Rebney. Bjorn Rebney says he's ready to let Ben Askren go to the UFC and let them make an offer, but they have matching rights. So Bjorn Rebney has gotten under the skin of Dana White, apparently. There's an article out today with Dana White's comments about the whole situation. He calls Rebney a scumbag. And he goes on to say, the guy says, yeah, we're going to let him go and let's part ways, but you aren't parting ways with him. He has a matching right and all that bullshit. This guy is a fucking typical boxing piece of shit. Everybody knows the guy is a scumbag, and it is what it is. So we'll see what happens to Ben. First they say they're going to let him go, but then they're not going to let him go. They'll probably end up suing him, too, and making him sit out and lose a bunch of money. So I don't really get this. What this solves by having these two promoters, you know, go back and forth at each other. At least Rebney is kind of veiled with his stuff and sort of respectable. He isn't quite staying out of the fight, but he doesn't take it to the extremes of dropping F-bombs and being unprofessional about it. And you know, obviously it's working because Dana White keeps talking about it and talk about calling the pot calling the kettle black. I mean, scumbag is a perfect word for White, I think. But this is the worst part. He goes after Tito Ortiz and Quentin Jackson and says, you have Bozo and the other Bozo over there saying, this is the greatest place to work and we're so happy. If that's the case, then why are you talking about me? What are you talking about me for? If you love where you're at and you are really happy, why are you talking about me? That makes no sense. You're saying you moved on to a better place and you are still complaining. That's like going to heaven and bitching about Earth. I suppose they have to talk about me on Sports Center because they definitely aren't going to talk about their fight. But, you know, that same segment right there that he talked about Ortiz and Jackson in a critical way could be put right back in at him for talking about Bellator. So this makes no sense to me how this guy keeps away with this stuff and nobody calls him on it. In other news about MMA, we've got Miguel Torres, who's a shady pack there with the UFC. He's thrown out and brought back in after a tweet about a rape van, which was apparently a quote from a movie, a TV show or something. They forgave him, brought him back, then threw him out again. Now he's with the World Series of Fighting, but just got back in the news for all the wrong reasons. He was caught with marijuana. In Marshall County there in, I don't know what state, that doesn't mention the state, just says Marshall County, whatever that is. But he's out on $1,500 bail, and this happened during the weekend of August 24th to 25th, so I don't know where to how much or whether he was actually smoking it at the time, but he was caught, charged with possession. And may see a suspension or something related to that, even though we usually typically only suspend people for positive tests. But who knows what the World Series of Fighting does with those situations. And I sent you guys a clip of this last week. We didn't get a chance to talk about it on the show, but there's a phenomenon over there in Russia called arrow street fighting, where they have just a sand pit for a ring and ropes and all that, and guy came right out of the crowd and beat his opponent. So look that up online on YouTube, Arrows Street Fighting. The guy's name was, the guy that got beat was Max Baltrushin, and a fan in the stands by the name of Dmitry, D-Z-U-B-I-Y, Dzubi, I guess, came out of the stand and fought and knocked the guy right out, 28 seconds into the.
I'd say he'd have a little bit of training.
Actually reminded me of the situation when I was at Norwich, and I had a little Friday Night Fights boxing circuit. Every Friday we'd have the big fights in the mess hall. And one night, two little Asian kids decided they wanted to fight, came right out of the audience, both of them, and this, the fastest punching I've ever seen to this day on TV or in live action. And these guys were obviously friends, but they were just trying to hit each other as many times as possible without hurting the other guy. So it was kind of play fighting, but kind of real at the same time. And, man, they were fast. And they never were on the boxing team, so it surprised me. They probably could have had some kind of a career in boxing if they stuck with it and actually, you know, didn't do it as just a joke. Anyway, a date has been set for the IBF welterweight championship bout between Amir Khan and Devin Alexander. They have been given B-Day, December 7th. Actually, that's the day Pearl Harbor was bombed, isn't it? December 7th, and it's going to be in Dubai or Brooklyn. Those are the two cities Richard Schaefer has settled on. But they're waiting to hear from the organizers in Dubai to see if they have a facility there to stage the event. Khan actually prefers the Dubai setting. He says they're doing big things over there, so he's excited about it. And if not there, it'll be at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. Alexander's 25-1 with 14 knockouts on a four-fight winning streak. And Khan is coming off a victory against Julio Diaz in his welterweight debut, as well as a win over Carlos Molina. And both of them want to fight this year, according to Schaefer. So we'll see what happens there. All right. So we have UFC 164 to talk about here before we leave. I think that's the last big thing to cover. And, of course, the main event is a rematch, but a very different circumstances this time out. Benson Henderson, 19-2, fighting Anthony Pettis, 16-2. Henderson has improved a lot. Anthony Pettis, I actually talked to Duke Rufus on this show not too long ago, a few months ago, back when it was still winter, I know, because he was shoveling snow and dealing with some kind of pneumonia at the same time. Tough guy. But Benson has got a lot to prove in this one because I think Anthony really threw him around in their last fight. And we'll see what happens this time out. I think Pettis, I like Pettis in this one. I think he has what it takes to win this one. But, you know, you can never count out Henderson.
He's, you know, Benson's a slight favorite.
Right.
Did you know that?
So, I did figure
but
that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I'm with Anthony all the way in this one.
Now, Henderson, he's very slick. He has great strategy. He's a smart thinking fighter. But Pettis, I don't think is going to allow him too much space to be strategic. I think he's going to come right at him. He's going to try different things. And it's been long enough between their last fight that both of them have had a chance to add some new tools to their arsenal, so I think it's going to be an entertaining fight there. And then we have a big heavyweight bout in the co-main event, Josh Barnett versus Frank Mir. Barnett's 32-6, Mir is 16-7. I know Mir is a big name, but I kind of have the feeling that if he loses badly in this one, he could get cut. I know we're going to go into overtime here. Frank, as a heavyweight, you know, I know that their heavyweight division isn't really stacked with a ton of people, but even though he's got a big name, he's been around forever, it just hasn't really been impressive in his last few fights. And just, I just don't see him.
Yeah, exactly. And I will say there's a lot of trash talk going on. Quite a bit of trash talk. Of course, that's sort of normal for Frank Mir. He's got that down to a science, and Barnett's not too bad at it himself.
Right.
So I don't see Josh losing this fight either way. I mean, you can never count Mir out. He's got that puncher's chance with his submissions, but I think Josh has enough to checkmate him on the ground and on the feet. I think Josh will run away with it. So we'll see.
Oh yeah. We have Chad Mendez fighting Clay Guida. Mendez is 14-1, Guida 30-13. Guida has been up and down in his last few fights. He's another guy that thinks a lot, tries to go too much on strategy sometimes rather than his pure ability. Another guy that we saw in the documentary there about Jackson's MMA. I think that this is a perfect fight for him to really prove that he still belongs in the UFC. He's got a lot to make up for in his last few fights. Just hasn't been very entertaining. He's been kind of more evasive than anything with his head movement and his running around the ring. So I hope he really, you know, starts to think about engaging more and scoring points more in this bout. We've got Brandon Vera fighting Ben Rothwell, another big heavyweight fight. Rothwell, I'm not sure when he last fought. I'll have to check. But he's 32-9 going into this one. Vera is 12-6, so obviously Rothwell has a big experience factor. I think he would be a favorite to win this one. Vera's been off and on. We've got Eric Koch, 13-2 versus Dustin Poirier, who's 13-3. Obviously, on paper, that's a very good matchup. I don't know about their experience level. I'm not really huge fans of either guy. I know. I think Koch is another one of those guys from the same camp as Pettis, if I remember correctly, from talking to Rufus. So he's definitely going to be bringing some good striking to this one. So hopefully, it'll be a good war to watch. Oh, we've got Gleason Tebow, 27-9, fighting Jamie Varner, 21-7-1. What was that, Tom?
Latavian alum.
Oh, that was Tony. Which one, Varner, Jamie?
Jamie Varner, Latavian boxing alum.
Oh. So that should be some good strikes.
I didn't know him. He was used there after I was, but...
Right, and I just wanted to mention Rothwell last fought in January, and he got beat by a now unretired Gabriel Gonzaga back on UFC on 7. Hey, we have Louis Godineau, the sixth fight of the night on Saturday, fighting Tim Elliott. Godineau is the ultimate fighter veteran. He's 6-2. Elliott is 9-3-1. And we've got Hyun-Gyu Lin. Never heard of him, but he's 11-3-1. He's fighting Pascal Kraus, who's 11-1. And he is definitely one of these other guys from the Pettis team, from Rufus Sports. And he had a really great fight on the last time he fought on the same card as Pettis. So, with only one loss coming in, I guess he would be the favorite there. We got another Japanese guy, Kyung Ho Kang, 11-6 in the fourth fight of the night, fighting Chico Kamush, who's 12-4. We've got a guy we were supposed to have on the show a few times, but couldn't get over the time difference there between here and Australia. Soa Palele, 18-3, fighting Nikita Krylov, who's 15-2. And we have a guy I interviewed out in Vegas, Ryan Couture, 6-2, fighting Al Iaquinta, another tough veteran from past seasons. Hasn't been around in a little while. I think he was in the final, wasn't he, against Michael Chiesa?
Yeah.
Tom might remember in Iowa. I do. But he's a tough guy. I don't think he really had a great shot of winning that fight after the bout he had to end the season, and the fact that it was live, it happened, the week before the final. So these guys fought, I think, like 3 or 4 times in a row every week. And he lost by rear naked choke in the first round there, so it didn't last very long. The only other loss is to Pat Oddenwood. It happened in Ring of Combat 38 back in 2011. That's where he fought his entire career before getting on the Ultimate Fighter. I think Couture's got a great shot at this one. I think he could definitely win this. Then we have Jared Hammond, 13-5, versus Magnus Seidenblad. Definitely heard of Hammond. Never heard of Seidenblad. Hammond's 13-5, Seidenblad 10-4. That's the first fight of the night. So that's all for MMA, UFC stuff. Tony, you got any big boxing events you want to tell us about before we go?
No, you know, I had fun at the fight last week. It was a good time. You know, I wish you guys all would have been there, but, you know, obviously it couldn't happen, but maybe next time. And, you know, it was just an enjoyable event.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll have to, as we get closer to the big fight in September there, the Mayweather fight, we'll have to start talking more about that next week. And a lot of undercard matches. You guys previewed the Garcia match there a little bit earlier. That's definitely something I'm looking forward to all around. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, Tony, the fans are holding their breath here, waiting on your crystal ball predictions for Mayweather. So the demand is there. We're on the edge of our seats.
Here to game
is around. Hopefully you can do another masterpiece.
He's already got here tonight and said 10th round, right, Tony? So it's already half written.
I didn't say how it's going to, you know, what's going to lead up to the 10th round stoppage. You know, I just said a few things to Damon on there, but I didn't reveal everything. I revealed part of it, but not all of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, Tony, what the problem is that last one was so on the money that we're going to see if the sequel can measure up, okay? We're going to hold you to it. You set the high standard.
Actually, you know, it's funny because some of the predictions that I bombed really bad was I picked Dana Hoya to stop Mayweather. And if you go back and watch that fight and read my report from the first eight rounds, my first eight rounds were so spot on it was actually kind of scary. And that was the first report that I wrote. And then the last, it just didn't pan out that way because Dana Hoya stopped throwing his jab. If he would have kept it, I think my prediction would have been right, because I picked 11th round stoppage for De La Hoya. But the one that I think I swung and missed so bad at was De La Hoya Pacquiao. Because I just figured, you know, Pacquiao at that time had been fighting, like, I think the highest he fought was lightweight. And now he was jumping up, like, two weight classes to welterweight. And he had just had, no more than, like, six, seven months before that, another nip and tuck fight with Marquez. And, you know, no way. De La Hoya is way too big. I said, he's just going to, every time Pacquiao gets in close, he's just going to shoulder him right off and hit him with a hook or hit him with a right hand or just stick him with a jab. And I didn't order the fight that night. And I went online and they're like, Pacquiao dominates De La Hoya, dominates and stops De La Hoya. I'm like, what the hell? And then I watched it and I was like, holy shit. I was like, De La Hoya wasn't even there. And they said, like, part of his problem during that fight was obviously he had to cut weight down lower than he had been in years, and he tried to make it look like he was in better shape than he really was. So he came in at 145, 2 pounds lower than he had to be, and he killed himself to do it. And then when they did like the weigh-in on like the scales in the dressing room, he really hadn't rehydrated himself because he would have been up to 160 at least. And he didn't do that because he wanted to make it look like he only gained a few pounds. And they even said, like, they were almost giving him IVs before the fight just to get him rehydrated. And Freddie Roach saw, like, the marks on him where they were rehydrating. He saw the marks on his arm. And he told Pacquiao, dude, jump on him. This guy has nothing. So those two I whipped on pretty bad. Two of the fights that I called, and people told me I was an idiot when I predicted them. One of them was Kelly Pavlik knocking out Jermaine Taylor in the first fight. Because, you know, Taylor was a favorite. You know, he just beat Bernard Hopkins two times. But I saw in his fight with a light punching Corey Sting that he was gun-shy. And I said, Pavlik's going to hit him, and when he does, it's over. Like it happened. And the other one was Joe Calzaghe against Roy Jones. I was like, you know what, Jones doesn't have anything left. And Calzaghe impressed me. He was still like he out-hustled Bernard Hopkins down the stretch. And I said, I think Kawasaki's just going to out-hustle him. Jones just has looked real lethargic. And lo and behold, you know, Kawasaki beat him up. And so I looked good on those ones. I think my all-time best was Miguel Cotto and Zab Judah. But I picked the stoppage, and I literally missed it by 45 seconds.
Hmm. Pretty intense. I would think, you know, Floyd has been pretty consistent with his decisions lately. So, other than the fluke knockout there of the Garcia,
Victor Ortiz,
yeah.
Ortiz, you don't put your hands down and look at the referee if you're kissing the guy 74 times. Come on.
All right. But anyway, I think it's going to be a decision. I like Floyd in it, but I don't count Canelo out either. I like this report I'm hearing about him knocking out all his sparring partners. And if it's going to be a Canelo win, I would say it's got to be the first four rounds, because after that, I think Mayweather has his history of adjusting, and he'll go to decision. So that's my semi-prediction. More like analysis, since I'm giving myself an out either way. So anyway, till next week, I think that's all we've got. We'll have another guest for next week. We're looking at trying to get Jimmy Quinlan, the Ultimate Fighter veteran there from last season. Massachusetts guy fighting in Maine, actually coming up pretty soon here. I haven't heard back from him yet, but I do have his email, so we'll see what happens there. But thanks to Damon Feldman there. And we'll see everybody next week.
Sounds like a plan, guys. Let's enjoy the fight.
Have a great weekend. Be safe. Be happy. Summer's coming to an end. It doesn't mean the fun's got to come to an end.
Nice. All right.
No work on Labor Day either.
Yeah. No working on Labor Day. I'm working on curing a hangover that day.
All right, folks.
We had a rough one last week, so. Okay. All right, gentlemen. Well, I'll talk to you next week, boys.
All right. Thanks for stopping by. Adios.